Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I am your host, Emma Gunn Awardner, recently christened Emma Gunns by Caroline Hirons. If you were wondering why I was called Emma Gunns and didn't use my full name. And in this episode, I'm joined by Dom Smales. Now, Dom is the CEO of a company called Gleam. And indeed, some of you won't need much of an introduction to who Gleam are or indeed who Dom is. And part of that is because Dom's appearance on the show is in large part down to listener request. He has always been on my list of dream guests. But when I recorded the episode with Ali Pebbles a few weeks ago and she talked about her career trajectory, her career journey, and then being signed by Gleam and how she worked with them, I had a lot of listener requests via the Facebook group and via DM to get Dom as a guest on the show. If you're not aware of what Gleam do and what Dom does, that could be a song. Let's make it into a rhyme. He is Gleam's CEO and they are a digital first management agency, which means they manage individuals who have built considerable audience and influence on social media channels. And even they say on their website, "We only manage quality talent who are among the top social creators in the world, dedicated and passionate individuals who are determined to be professional and accountable while exploring their potential in all areas of media and merchandising." Now, the other day when I recorded the episode with Nick Hayes-Chapman recently, we actually taped it in Gleam's head office. And I took the opportunity to pop my head around Dom's office door, told him that my listeners and I would like him to be on the show. And a week later, I was sitting in his office recording this episode that you're about to hear. Now, if you listen to this show regularly, it will not surprise you one little bit that the reason I wanted to chat with Dom was to find out how he took a hunch that YouTube was going to be huge, and this was nearly a decade ago, and A, turned it into a business, and B, got everyone around to his way of thinking. To me, that is heaven. Unpicking that kind of how he did it, oh, that was just gorgeous for me. It's worth noting that Gleam, if you aren't aware, represents some of the biggest names on YouTube. We're talking about Sam and Nick from Pixie Woo, Tanya Burr, Zoella, Lily Pebbles, The Anna Reddit, an up-and-coming skincare guru some of you may have heard of, Caroline Hirons. She's so going to punch me in the face for that. Doesn't matter, it's worth it. Not to mention Ruth Crilly, who is obviously a model recommends, and Nadine Baggett. Gleam don't mess about, just so you know. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Dom. I certainly did. It's kind of tangled into my DNA to be slightly intimidated by anyone who is the boss. But when I came away from my chat with Dom, someone who shall remain nameless texted me and said, "How did it go?" And among other things, talking about how inspiring his business knowledge and instinct is, my response was, "It was fascinating. You can tell he is fundamentally a good person." So buckle up and get ready for my conversation with Dom. I really hope you enjoy it. Dom, thank you for joining me on The Emma Gunn Show.
Thank you for having me on The Emma Gunn Show.
It's a delight to have you here. And you were a requested guest by quite a few people in the Facebook group after the episode with Lily Pebbles, talking about her relationship with Gleam.
Excellent.
And so your reputation precedes you already.
So Lily's like my hype man.
She is your hype man.
Amazing.
Can I be a fly girl? Is that in living colour? I definitely just want to be Jennifer Lopez, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, you manage talent, but along the way have become known yourself.
Well, the irony of that little quip before is actually I'm Lily's hype man, completely. In fact, everybody here is Lily's hype man, really. So yeah, I did. The whole thing started with me managing talent.
Mm-hmm.
Or in fact, rewind a little bit more, the thing started with me consulting on social media,
mm-hmm.
basically. And
in
then
what
meeting
capacity?
Some talent.
And was this back in 2010, prior?
This was, yeah. Yeah, so in 2010, I was working at a production company.
Mm-hmm.
They made TV and radio, and they made radio promotions as well. And I have a past in radio, but on the commercial side of things, so I sold the ads on radio stations and ended up working in specifically in digital for Radio Station Group, what's known as Global Radio today, in fact. Mm-hmm. And went on from there to work at this production company that specialised a bit in radio. And it was at that point that I had the epiphany moment and thought about going into social media in terms of my own business.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever set out to be your own business?
I did at that point, yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted to... This is the whole thing, and I don't know if this is a forum for the story or not, I guess, but...
Let's try it out for size.
I had a career in media and marketing and that kind of stuff, and when I ended up at this production company, which I was enjoying to a certain degree, but it was a small... After working at big media owners, it was quite a small production company. Mm. And it was highly stressful. I ended up being the MD there, so I was running it, but wow, it wasn't sense. It wasn't my production company. Mm. And I had a big health event issue in 2010, whereby I started getting enormous headaches, double vision, all of that kind of stuff, basically. I didn't know what it was. I went to a lot of opticians,
yeah,
thinking that it was my contact lens prescription or my glasses prescription, mm, giving me headaches. And about the third or fourth, like, specialist optician that I got to, said to me, you should have an MRI scan immediately. And at that moment, and I was sat in his consultation room with my wife and two small children who were, like, one was a babe in arms at the time and one was, like, 2 years old kind of thing. At that moment was one of the most kind of like terrifying moments of my life, I guess, because I thought, of course, I've got, you know, there's something wrong in my head and it's like a brain tumour or something like that, and this is it. I was MRI scanned that night, and thank goodness it was all benign, and it was a condition called hydrocephalus, which is water on the brain.
Okay.
Yeah. So my brain was being put under pressure from a build-up of fluid around the brain because the cerebrospinal fluid wasn't circulating properly, and that was making me symptomatic, i.e. double vision and headaches and all that kind of thing. So it was a huge relief, basically, but it escalated really quickly after that MRI scan, weirdly, and I ended up getting rushed into hospital the very next day and undergoing emergency brain surgery. So it was like a mega... health event. I was off work for 6 months or something like that. My, you know, my kids were coming into in and out of the hospital. I really thought my, you know, my chips were up or whatever the phrase
that was
is.
It, yeah.
But it made me think again about life, and it's a bit cheesy, but it made me think again about life and kind of where I was going, what I was doing, what was important to me, and what I was passionate about, and all of those kind of things. And I resolved, as I recovered, to change jobs, start my own business, and what was I interested in?
Mm.
And I was interested in social media at the time. It was in the days when Facebook was just beginning to properly blow up. Mm. YouTube was beginning to get some traction. It was a couple of years or so into its Google ownership. And I used to spend every day looking at it.
Yeah.
And I noticed that a lot of the young, really young people in the business that I was working at the time as well were spending a lot of time looking at it. So it fascinated me as a media person. And so once I got my health back and gone back and sorted some stuff out, I quit my job and set up on my own as Gleam Digital, which was a social media consultancy. I think the strap line was creative with social media or something like that. And in those very early days, I was lucky enough to have a great relationship with Chanel, because we'd done some work for them, and I managed to persuade them that they needed my consultancy on social media and how to connect with online audiences and online communities and all of that kind of stuff. And during that bit of consultancy, I began to follow and focus in on a couple of girls called Sam and Nick Chapman.
Never heard of them.
Who had a channel on YouTube called Pixie Woo.
Yeah.
And I was absolutely fascinated by the fact that these two girls were popping up on the homepage of YouTube pretty much every week, driving more engagement, comments and views than a lot of the viral videos that were generally the content that you would find on YouTube in those days. And it was just them doing some makeup lessons on a, you know, plain background or in their bedroom or wherever. And the phenomenon was the fact that the audiences were watching these guys, not just for the learning, but because they were into them and their lives and their personalities. And they would chat while they were giving the makeup tutorials. And I reached out to Sam and Nick, and on the old YouTube email system, when you used to send a message via YouTube.
Oh, could you do that?
Yeah.
Gosh.
You'd send a message via YouTube and it'd drop into their YouTube inbox, and I think it was Sam replied, and we met, and she came to the office in London where I was still working, as I was working out my kind of, like, notice period sort of thing. And we had a chat about it, and it was one of those kind of moments where I thought, this is so going to be a thing, like, these guys are great. They were great people as well. You're kind of engaging and, you know, charismatic and all of those kind of things. And I'm sure this is going to be... And they asked me commercial questions and I gave them some advice and I asked them about what they were doing and it all kind of like began to formulate as an idea in my head. And as the months went by, I started paying the bills, basically doing my consultancy. I was literally working from a laptop in a coffee shop where I live, putting together reports and campaigns and ideas and all that kind of stuff, and trying to do deals as well for, it was only Sam and Nick really at the time. And then there was the there were various other conversations, and then Sam and Nick introduced me to Tanya, who was their brother's girlfriend, who was saving up to go travelling and was making a YouTube channel, and same thing kind of happened. I started trying to help Tanya with her commercial decisions and what was happening on the channel and whether and growing the audience and all those kind of stuff. And then Jim, of course, got into it.
Yeah.
From he was working in an insurance company at the time and hated it.
Mm.
Started his channel, and then on it went. I met Ruth Crilly, friend of Sam and Nick's. It was all kind of like it was like we were building a little kind of like family business in a way.
And when you're in you develop that relationship with Sam and Nick, and so begins Gleam, as it were. How do you approach business? Was it just a case of let's just, you know, take it day by day, let's just see what happens, let's be clever, or did you say no, that I believe this is where it can go, I feel that this is the potential power of the YouTube platform, and with you on it, it could go here. Like, did you know then? Did you have an approach?
So, if I'm honest, the only thing that I knew for sure was this was definitely going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys as talents on those platforms, if they had the right attitude and they approached it in a professional way, would have a growing career ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably one of the things that is still very pertinent today is that it's never not about hard work and focus. I had a business plan, but if I were to show it to you from back then, it doesn't resemble anything that is, you know, real today.
Which, well, I don't know whether you agree with this, but I think that's a good thing, because I think to adapt in the moment is a real strength, to be able to spot it, feel it as it's happening.
Totally. And this is a bit, and it still is kind of like 8 years on. This is a business that changes every 3 to 6 months, because that's the pace of progression and evolution in this kind of space. So I think having a business plan made me apply my brain to kind of like where we would be going. But my kind of like ability to push the business plan aside was probably a key thing in terms of getting to where we got to in the end.
I'm interested because you were, correct me if I'm wrong, always, you were a lone voice, or maybe one of a few, highlighting and signposting, hey everyone, this way, away from maybe mainstream commercial media. That can be quite a challenge, because you can be, people can tell you that you're wrong, and sometimes when you have, I know I've believed in projects or believed in businesses to the point where I feel like I can taste it, and yet I can't materialize it quickly enough. So for you, was it that thing of you had your health issues, you refocused and you just went, this is absolutely cast iron going to be the thing? Did you have to cancel out any negative noise?
Yeah, and I think we all did. And back then as well, it's all about people kind of like also seeing that vision and having faith in the fact that this was an exciting thing, not only the talent, but also the people that took the leap and kind of got on board in those really early days with this bloke, you know, I was on my own. Like, to convince people to come and work with you takes a lot of bravery and faith on their side and vision on their side. So it's why I'm always a massive advocate and of the power of the team and the focus of the people on the team. And I'm in awe of people like Lucy Lendrum and Maddie Chester and who got on board in those very, very early days. And
when there wasn't
believed,
You know, look at the success we've had so far. No, come join the party.
There's not a nice office at all. There's no kind of guarantee that you will have a job in a year's time, pretty much. And I can imagine the conversations they had with their peers and parents and so on. They said, yeah, we're going to leave this well-known, you know, business and career path that I'm on right now, and I'm going to go work over here for this guy who's talking about YouTubers and the future for them as social talent and... power that the internet will have on consumer choice in the future, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like it takes that faith and commitment, I think, all the way through. And the talent also were kind of like everybody online at that point in time were pioneering a new platform. They were dedicating their days to creating content with no guarantee of any future or income associated with it. It was just a passion. And I think that's the key difference between then and now, and this is the noise that we've got to kind of find a path through now, is finding and maintaining and nurturing that passion to create great content and communicate with audiences in a real relationship rather than just for financial gain or whatever else. So it was actually back in those coffee shop days that did the very first brand association, brand deal, as you might call it, with a big hair brand. And or it was a beauty brand that had like a hair department.
Division.
And they were massively forward thinking about using talent like Sam and Nick to help them with their campaign to launch this new hair product. And it involved Sam actually dyeing her hair. Nick couldn't do it because she was pregnant with Harry at the time, I think. But I managed to persuade Sam that she should. We would go with it. She, I think she's still forgiving me, actually, because it took a lot of dyeing effort to...
Multiple layers of dye.
And to get it out again, and her hair suffered a bit, I think, as well. But... this brand were way ahead of their time when thinking about using talent in this way to endorse a product and, in fact, be an ambassador. And we ended up doing a fairly long-term, having a fairly long-term relationship with this brand, which, again, was way ahead of their time.
It is impressive for a brand, particularly if we're talking about 8 years ago. Is it 8 years ago? Thinking about how old Harry was. To think... that's a big deal, because that would still have been in the heyday of the celebrity ambassador.
Yeah, absolutely. And I could cite a few brands now who were totally visionary when it came to using talent back in those days. I remember Tanya's very first commercial relationship as well, and a group of people that were that totally got it and got on board about time. And although it's not that long ago, it is a long time ago in social media terms.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're way ahead of the curve. Real Techniques is another one, is the partnership that has grown between Sam and Nick and the Real Techniques brand, and the fact that a makeup brush manufacturer from Midwest America had the vision to see that having as creative partners a couple of girls who were great makeup artists and having had a YouTube channel to add to the education and authenticity of this brand is pretty visionary, I think.
That to me is the perfect storm. That must be the deal that everyone tries to do again, because that's just the perfect relationship. Great products.
Yeah.
I mean, there is not a duff product in that range. Every time they launch something, I think, well, I've needed this my entire life, obviously.
Yeah. And that's also because, A, they're a great team over there, but Sam and Nick are passionate about that brand, and the fact that their name's on it, and they are there at every step helping develop the new products.
Yeah.
That it's got to be the real deal. It's their, it's a tool of their trade also as makeup artists first and foremost. But I think that's also a blueprint for kind of how talent ought to think about building a sustainable career in this space, is that you do things that you are passionate about and have that as a starting point to building something. And that's where we're kind of, we're all about that. It's not just about banging in the brand deals. This is about building something with talent that's sustainable and has some longevity.
Yeah.
But it's got to start with a real passion for something. Mm. You know, a music management company with Marcus Butler, for example. Anything, the brands that we build here are based on passion.
And there are brands that would want to hitch a wagon to a talent, but there is no passion there. So that's when you have to do the saying of the no.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's got to be right, for sure. I think there's a lot more opportunity in the future as well, though, for brands to take that next step and find their advocate, their partner that happens to have a social media audience also and be a content creator and partner them in a much more meaningful, equitable way, you know, kind of like that's the interesting next step, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. When I had Sam and Nick on the show last year, they said exactly that. It's just, if your incentive to get the camera out, charge your battery, put your lights up, is what money can I make at the end of this?
Yeah.
Then it's the wrong reason for doing it.
Yeah, totally. And it's totally true. Mm. And audiences, what's really interesting about these platforms, the social media platforms, and also what's enormously valuable, if it's treated in the right way, is the fact that that audience is super smart and savvy, and they're not going to put up with any wool being pulled over their eyes. And there's so many of them as well. It's like the wisdom of crowds. You know that if you ask kind of like a million people the most difficult questions on earth, you'll find the right answers in what comes back. Mm. And the crowd generally will find and the truth about anything. The same thing happens, and the same thing happens between the relationship between someone that sits in front of a camera and broadcasts on a social media platform and the audience. So the real the true authenticity of that relationship will out. And I think we're in an age now whereby because it's a thing, like anybody with an internet connection and a camera, even a webcam, can set up as a talent. I'm an influencer, as they're known these days. And it's finding a way through all of that as well to find the gems and the real relationships and the real talent. That's what gets me out of bed every morning, you know?
But I wouldn't even know how one would be able to do that now with so much in the same way. Because there are so many. That must have made the job much more challenging.
No, I think not more challenging, just harder work and more interesting, perhaps. There's always been, as you started out this segment with a question about getting through the negativity and the naysayers and so on and so forth, there's kind of like, that is an ongoing battle for everybody here, is educating, I guess, and talking to people about what's what's exciting about this space, whilst there is so much more noise now in the business. You know, there's to the power of 1,000 more companies doing what we are doing, and there's to the power of 1,000,000 more talent doing what Sam and Nick and Tanya and Jim and so on were doing back in those days. And it's much more noisy and cluttered than it ever has been, but the kind of principles should remain the same. And I love the fact that it's actually easier to find great people to work at Gleam, because it's a thing now, so you can kind of, it's a bona fide job that you can advertise and so on, and people will half want to work here. And B, the amount of talent people are, it's attracting people that would have the talent to the platforms, instead of believing they have to go the TV route or follow some other medium if they're wanting to engage with audiences and they think they've got something to say. And it's the same with publishing and, you know, podcasting and all of those kind of things. I love the democracy that has been built for great content.
Yes. To that point, you just mentioned actually about there are 1,000 other agencies doing this now. I mentioned to you before we started recording about, it fascinates me, anybody who carves a new path, is that the right expression? Who creates a new path. There is no blueprint. There was no blueprint to success for you, and there is no blueprint. So navigating your way around, whether it's business decisions or where to go next, again, sort of coming back to that idea of, what are your resources? Is it just instinct? How do you research making good decisions in this industry, particularly in the early days?
I take other people's advice a lot. I think that whilst I kind of like saw the potential for talent right at the very, very beginning, it's been about making sure that I've tapped into really good people all the way through, who, as the business has grown, now know much better than me about what the right decisions are. And I trust those people. I only employ people that I trust 100%. And it's the same with when we're thinking about talent on the roster. There's a big trust element there. This is about, we're all on the same team, both talent and staff, and never assuming that like this is the right thing to do, because even if it is the right thing to do in that moment, it could be the wrong thing 10 minutes later.
Right.
So you've got to remain completely agile about that. And everybody else is like that as well. And that's why we'll all kind of like, as a group, go in the right direction. But it's about, taking the right advice, talking to people that know. And that actually is the essence of why this talent is so successful, this type of talent. And influencers generally, if you want to use that marketing expression, because...
I love that.
What?
Continue. But just coming back to marketing expression, never heard it called that before, but that's exactly what it is.
That's exactly what it is, absolutely. And it communicates to a particular community of commercial people what these guys, what this talent is doing. They know them as influencers. But that's why it's so interesting and powerful.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Because it's about people taking other people's advice and trusting it, kind of thing. And I think it kind of like works like that inside this place as well.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're through the point of having to convince people? Do you think the majority, whether it's brands, whether it's...
No, we have it. There are conversations every day about convincing people. And that's why this job, the job the talent managers and the brand partnerships managers here have to do every day, is has with it five times the amount of work than a usual commercial negotiation that you would go through, because there's that overcoming of any preconceptions, there's the justification of the value of the partnership, everything that has to happen without what legacy media has already had in place through hundreds of years of evolution and so on and so forth. But it's getting better. So it is getting, like, the percentage of people you talk to who do get it and believe in the power of this these platforms and the talent on these platforms is, there's much more of them than there ever were, and every week there's more.
Because I would say that maybe there would have been a vibe a couple of years ago of people saying, well, this YouTube thing has just come out of nowhere, and you would sit at your desk and say, this company is 6 years old, these people have been creating content for nearly over half a decade in some instances, this hasn't come out of nowhere, it's just that you're tuning into it now.
Yeah, totally. And that was a constant question that I got standing up in those early days, was like, yeah, but they've been around for 5 minutes, like, what qualifies these people to be able to talk to an audience like that? And my answer was always, you don't understand the amount of graft, time, effort and learning that has gone into creating a channel that has, you know, a high number of engaged followers. You try it, like, set yourself up a YouTube channel or an Instagram feed and try and get to 1 million followers, see how long it takes you. Like, it is it's a skill and a talent. It takes a lot of hard work and consistency and all of those kind of things. So it's not a new thing, but it seems like the world has come to it all at once. 2014, 15, 16 maybe, the kind of world arrived at social media. And that, like most things that suddenly come out of the blue into someone's consciousness, it jolts a little bit. And we had, you know, quite a lot of, just people were incredulous to what was going on, in terms of they could not believe it. And I think it caused some anger in some sections of the media as well. Like, the whole qualification question. And so there was a period of time when, and it still happens to a certain extent today, where every panel, conversation, newspaper article was about, what is this? You know, how does it work? Why does it work? Whereas now, I think there's much more acceptance of it. And the kind of, I suppose, the successes that we've all had all over the world as well, and not just Gleam, I'm talking about the industry as a whole. The successes that we've had have kind of ratified the this platform for the future.
So people, when you just said that about people are more accepting of it, it's like people don't want to look under the hood anymore. They're like, we get it, we understand, it's a machine.
Yeah, people try to quantify it much more and more as well. So it's still evolving from that perspective. And I think that's genuinely a good thing as well. You know, I think the more, the work that's done by the ASA on disclosure, for example, the kind of like the metrics that are applied to what's good and what's bad is only a good thing, because at the end of the day, we should all be only interested in genuine, good and compliant relationships with this talent. And also, especially if there's a commercial deal in place. So it's you know, there'll be a few paths gone down on the way there that are wrong, and we'll turn back and go down another one. But I think generally the evolution is a really positive thing.
Yeah.
And I think I would say to anybody as well that thinks about, oh, this it's a phenomenon, it's a fad, or it's a flash in a pan, or it's, you know, won't last much longer. Although I don't hear that too much these days.
I wouldn't imagine you do.
But there are people, you know, look at Sam and Nick, right back to 2010. This is, so far it's 8 years. No, that's, I guess, a fair stretch.
Yeah.
And those guys are doing brilliantly still.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was watching the S-Bend video, the S-Bend, not the S-Bend, the S-Wave video last night when I was taking my makeup off. I'm hooked.
Yeah.
So you don't do all this hard work. You go around convincing people. You have this business idea. You create these relationships with this talent. And then everyone comes around to your way of thinking. And it's a bit like the green light goes off. And then the hard work really begins. So what then? Like, did you feel a moment of, okay, well, we don't have to... We're not banging our heads against a brick wall now. We can actually... Now it's a completely different proposition. We're now dealing with brands who want to work with us, and so we've now got to get our head around all of this.
Hmm. Yeah, you have to grow up really fast, and you have to... We've always tried to here be best in class, or be kind of like best... present best practice, and presenting best practice... at something that hasn't existed before is a real kind of race, and it's hard work to constantly evolve and change and pivot and all those kind of things. So that is hard work, and we've tried to put resource behind it as well, and make sure that in a world where there's just an absolute plethora of opportunity for this type of talent on these platforms, that A, we don't do everything, and B, we'll make sure that we try and do it to the very best of our ability.
Mm.
And that means, again, taking the right advice, applying the right skill set to things and resource, and going back to that that aim of not just doing things because we can, or doing things you know, just for the money. It's not about that. It's about trying to make good product, be that content or a book or...
Well, I was going to ask you about this, because, and the power of no, which has been discussed on this podcast quite a few times.
Right.
And the fact that all of a sudden everyone's like, yeah, no, we've got budget. Yeah, let's throw some money towards YouTube. And all of a sudden you're in this lovely position. And as you say, you could have gone, yeah, let's make hay while the sun shines, taken it all up and then bought an island, holidayed in the Maldives, whatever floats your boat. But Gleam are known in the industry, and I obviously am aware in a way that maybe the listeners aren't, from working in the industry, about how Gleam is talked about, and Gleam is talked about very favourably, and you are known for being, as I said, the gold standard, but you're also known for turning things down if it's not right, and having a very staunch position and saying this isn't right for our client or this isn't appropriate.
Yeah.
How did you draw those barriers? Was it just a case of... No, this is a long term. This is a business. This isn't just about capitalizing on a fad. This is strategic, long term business partnership building.
Yeah, I think that being able to be picky earlier on in the evolution of this has helped create a sustainable business, basically. Mm-hmm. And I really hope it's good to hear you talk about the reputation that Gleam have got in the marketplace, because I worry sometimes that we're seen as like this barrier, basically, to getting access to talent sometimes, because we're protective of them, which I hope isn't, you know, this is not the case. It's about quality, and not only for the talent's sake but also for the brand's sake, because we don't want any partnerships with brands to happen and not be successful. So the fact that they've been said no to, it might not be particularly specifically the brand or the person or anything like that. It might be the execution that isn't right, and that should be something that we worked on. And I hope that the future is about building closer partnerships, so that together we can come up with much better solutions and more successful ways to keep building this entire industry. Because I think there's a danger at one stage, if everybody does everything all the time without any thought or application to how successful it will be, just looking at the paycheck that will arrive, then it'll slowly dilute the effectiveness of partnerships with this type of talent from a I'm talking from a commercial perspective here. And then there won't be an industry in 5 years' time, because people will have just lost faith in it completely. Not only commercially, partners will have lost faith in its potency to actually drive sales or reach or good sentiment about a brand or a partner or whatever, but also from the audience's perspective. Audiences, as I said before, super smart.
Mm.
They don't want to be seeing anybody talking about something that isn't right for them.
Mm.
So you will lose on both sides eventually. For that quick hit of a paycheck that particular week, you will lose for future of your business commercially as a talent. Other talents that we don't even manage or will lose, because that will take a brand out of the marketplace and deplete the faith in what this talent can do for everybody here in the industry. On the audience side of things, they're getting a diluted product and content from someone that they trusted as well, when they see something that doesn't fit or isn't genuine.
Well, that's the thing. And if it's not genuine, it stinks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I did an Instagram post about my alopecia, and all of a sudden there are brands saying, hey, and I don't use it. So very kind of you, and that's a very nice number, but I can't lie yeah. to my followers. That would be so mean. Be wrong.
Yeah, totally. Because you have a different relationship with your followers than anyone would have had before the internet with a broadcast audience.
Yes. Now, before we started, I said that I'd come up with a couple of nicknames for you based on my research.
Oh, God.
I'm going to repeat them now. So, the Star Maker was the first, because, and I dread to draw this comparison, but I'm imagining how someone who perhaps isn't in the industry might view you from the outside. And I think you might be seen as like a Simon Cowell type, i.e. you've got the Midas touch, you can make someone a star.
First of all, unfortunately, that's not true. In this industry, the people that will make the stars are the talent themselves. It's their relationship with the audience, their skill and ability to be able to make great content that lands with an audience and makes people recommend it to their friends, because that's generally how the audiences grow. That's the egg, the golden egg. What we do here is only make sure that we are guiding people, and people that have the aptitude to want to work as hard as you need to work, be as reliable as you need to be brand safe, be responsible, be punctual, be diligent, all those things that you have to be great talent. We're here to provide the framework, and we've got the most experience, I'd say, in the world at the correct steps to take to make this a good career, basically. And we've got the right, 8 years or so, we've got the right connections and relationships and all that kind of stuff now as well.
I would imagine you get many requests on a daily, weekly, monthly basis of people who want to work with Gleam and be signed by Gleam. Do you have is it instinct? Do you have like a check sheet of they have to be this, 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 and this? Would you encourage people to get in touch with you if they're listening to this podcast and they have a blog or a video channel that they'd like to get representation for?
Absolutely, yeah. It's the lifeblood of this business. But I would say that we've tried over the years many specific algorithms, pieces of software, talent discovery platforms, blah, 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 blah.
Such things existed.
Oh, yeah, kind of like, there's lots of ways that kind of like talent can be surfaced. And remember, there's thousands, if not millions of talent now the world over. But time and time again, we rely here at Gleam on the passion of everybody that works here and the talent on the roster to be recommending people, discovering people. And these guys out here know a lot more about who is great than I do nowadays. But I find if I have a talent come across my desk more than two or three times in a week, something's going on here. And it becomes really obvious. And I hope that our reputation will mean that we find the best talent and end up having a conversation with them. There are talent out there I wish we managed, but they're having a great career with another management company, and that's fine. I kind of like, it's good that the whole industry is growing and evolving. But yeah, we're kind of like, we're always on the lookout every day.
Okay. Well, there you go, listeners. There'll be some links in the show notes. There will be people listening to this podcast who do not have a digital platform, who are just living their lives, doing their job. But I think something I'm interested to pick your brains about is how to, and we've covered this before in previous podcasts, is how to be confident in setting your worth and knowing what your value is.
And I wonder if you pass on any advice to your talent, or if there are any muscles that you've flexed and grown over the years in terms of understanding one's value in a professional setting, be that digital media or otherwise.
Yeah. So I think that, first of all, everybody has got to have complete faith in the fact that this platform and your audience is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And I still sit on panels where people kind of poo-poo the value of this type of media. And someone will put their hand up and say, yeah, but how many such and such and suches have you actually sold? That kind of thing. And there's oceans of figures where there's really solid case studies behind mm-hmm. sales growth. But the fact is that this does work, and the fact that it is a growing industry, and marketeers, advertisers, broadcasters, publishers are all have got behind it and are still behind it
mm-hmm.
is testimony enough, I think, to the fact that this does work. So no one should doubt the value of these platforms and this mm-hmm. type of talent. And I think if you have a relationship with an audience and it's growing, then you should not doubt how rare that is also.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have, had to flex our muscles to protect the people's value, but I think that's only to protect the future industry as well,
mm-hmm.
Because it's been no good for anybody if, again, going back to the dilution point, if we decrease the value of the industry by doing bad mm-hmm. deals. And we're also passionate about protecting what is essentially can be a really young talent.
Mm-hmm.
When people come to this, there's a quite a young generation are coming to it now, and we're really passionate about protecting that talent from what is the whole world now, it's mm-hmm. the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
So it's a family business still. I have two young daughters. Everybody here kind of like feels, a sense of responsibility to the talent and the audience, and so we're trying to make sure that we protect that basically and do the right thing going forward.
And I suppose I should probably get you to just quickly say, because digital first is the definition, how would you describe it? It is people who have a digital platform first, they're a talent who's
yeah. Although we're kind of like, it's still evolving. So the search for a term to describe this type of talent has always been a challenge. And it's gone.
Some have come and gone.
Yeah, it started with social talent.
Right.
Because there were talent on social media.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not just on social media anymore. Mm. And actually, it's about publishing also. And TV is just as relevant as the internet is and so on. So it's moved on now to digital first talent. And even it's probably due a bit of a refresh now as well, in that it's digitally minded talent, because we're meeting people now. We've just launched Gleam Titles, which is a publishing arm of Gleam, run by Abby Gail Bergstrom, who she was the publisher for Louise Pentland's first book at Simon Schuster. Yeah, and she was fascinated by the space and has come over and now runs our publishing department. But we started as a literary agent representing authors who are digitally minded. It doesn't mean that they have to have first built an enormous platform online and then mm-hmm. be converting that into publishing, but it just means that they're of a generation, they are interested and can engage with digital platforms,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't mean that they're digital first. They might have had a column in a newspaper or written a book previously mm. or all of those kind of things. God, one of the talent that we signed recently, Nadine Baggett, was the beauty editor at Hello magazine.
I think she was at Hello, my bitter rival for many years.
Before she were, before she had channels on social media.
I know.
So it's kind of like it will evolve and continue to evolve. And that's what's so great about this space. What I love about this space is that the success of this whole industry is down to the audience.
Yeah.
It's down to people making good stuff and audiences liking it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anybody's place to say that's rubbish and that's not.
Mm.
Not my place, not anybody's here place to do that. It's about the audiences engaging with it. Mm. And we try and pick that and we try and spot who's going to have that great relationship with an audience and being able to build one? But it's the audience that are the studio bosses, the editors, the commissioners. They're the people that matter.
Even the way you speak about it, you say audiences, and often when I'm out and about talking to brands or what have you, it's always numbers. You never say audience. It's always in numbers. That's really interesting. I've never had a conversation where the audience has been described as like living human beings with thoughts and feelings, like sentient beings. It's just been figures.
I don't think, I mean, the numbers thing is an interesting point as well, in that original generation of talent in this space is about the incredible scale of how fast the numbers were growing, and then people got to the seven figures, millions and multiple millions and so on. And yes, that's still incredibly powerful and pertinent, but these days I think it's about the relationship still between the audience rather than the cold hard numbers, and it's about what kind of content and conversation and expertise people are bringing to the table rather than just the number next to their name on social media.
I must admit, the brands that I work with, or people in the industry I work with as a beauty journalist, who I feel have always got, in inverted commas, video, YouTube, social, podcast, whatever, are the ones who think about, well, you're actually communicating a message. They don't think, oh, but you've got however many thousand followers. They say, oh, actually, people really listen to you. It's far more emotional language.
Yeah, totally. And I think in an era when broadcasters, publishers and brands will be partnering with talent much more than they ever have done, rather than just doing tactical, right, I want one video or I want one tweet or something like that, it'll be much more about how you can make something really interesting together that's based on the quality of the content and the way it talks to an audience, rather than the specific amount of the number next to that name, you know?
Really interesting.
Yeah, and there'll be other ways of kind of like driving numbers in the future that will not be just about the number next to a talent's name on Instagram or whatever.
So you don't wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and just there's a scrolling, there's like 10 computer screens in your home and they're all scrolling numbers and algorithms and you're like, this is what we have to do today. It's far less clinical.
It's far less clinical than that, yeah.
Good, because that wouldn't be good for you.
No, if the future, my future, I hope, is about getting involved in really fascinating creative ideas with brilliant talent. And that's about the long and the short of it, basically. So if that is a place we move much more towards, then I'll be really happy. And I think, again, like the founding of anything, it's if it starts there, then the numbers follow. The success, you know, follows. And I think we should all keep that in mind.
I agree. What a lovely note on which to finish, because I know you're a very busy man. You've got to crack on to the next important thing.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for your time.
I've been a fan of this podcast for a long time.
Oh,
so
Dom.
I'm a little bit starstruck and nervous.
Oh, please don't be. I hope I haven't made it difficult.
No, not at all.
Good.
Not at all.
Good. Well, obviously, listeners, all the links to Dom, Gleam, and all the talent we've mentioned, our good friend Lily Pebbles, Sabrina Nick, Caroline Hirons, that bird Nadine Baggett, all of their links will be in the show notes and in the social media post. If you feel so inclined, I'm sure Dom would love you to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. Remember, don't be too cruel as well. I don't have as thick a skin as the talent thing.
Thank you very much, and I'd love to chat to you again soon in the future.
Thanks, Emma.
Before you rush off, if I could just steal you for a couple more moments. If you've enjoyed this episode, if you enjoy the podcast as a whole, or if you have any standout favourite shows, I would be so grateful if you could take a couple of seconds to go over to your streaming service, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever it is that you listen, and leave a 5-star review. And if you have time and feel so inclined, a couple of sentences about why you liked that particular episode, or indeed the podcast stream as a whole. It would make a podcast like mine stand out on such massive, massive platforms. And don't forget, if you want to join the Facebook group, the private closed Facebook group that I approve every single member, just head over to Facebook via the link in the show notes, which you can find wherever you're streaming this. Click the link, ask to join, I go in and approve you, and all of a sudden, whoosh, there you are, having fabulous conversations with all of the other brilliant, wonderful, members of that group. There's over 1,000 of us in there now having lots of conversation about skincare, 26 habits and all sorts. So please go in.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Joy, thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you on the next one.